There was like a place where two pieces would break. And I watched him fix it, and I was like, are you Batman? Like, who are you? And he's like, I'm involved. You know, his R&D department is right next to his office. I mean, it was just this thing of like, yeah, man, I put my name on this thing, and so I'm involved. I understand how it works. I think somebody like Zuckerberg is a good example of that.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, I think he knows as much as you could, you know, what's going on in his company. And he like coded the thing, a lot of it himself, right? So I think being in the game is really important for an entrepreneur.
Hello and welcome. I'm your host, Jens Heidland, and I'm truly thrilled to introduce our guest for today. He's US Army veteran, a coach, and someone who lives and breathes entrepreneurship. Meet Jason Skizik, a man of many hats, father, husband, fighter, and he describes himself as a carrier of heavy things. Jason's passion for entrepreneurship has driven him to establish Spear and Clover, a company dedicated to transforming businesses with passionate leaders, talented teams, and strong playbooks, pushing them from mere contenders to dynasty organizations. And if you're thinking, I've heard that voice somewhere, you're right. Jason is also a fellow podcaster, caving out insights and sharing stories from across the entrepreneurial landscape. In today's episode, we are diving deep into frameworks for entrepreneurs and uncovering practical ways they can be implemented. We'll be tapping into Jason's military background to understand the military mindset and exploring topics like impact, the essence of community or tribe building, and striking the right balance between long-term focus and short-term actions. So without further ado, let's get this conversation started. Please join me in welcoming Jason Skizik. Before we go into entrepreneurship and learning from you about frameworks for entrepreneurs, I have found something about you. The title was Switching Systems Engineer.
I was always a good kid, but I was, you know, ADD or entrepreneur's disease, whatever you want to call it. And so I didn't have a ton of focus, but I had all the passion and energy in the world. And so as a young man, I did what so many people like that have done and continue to do. I joined the military. And when I did, I asked my friend who I respected, who was probably 25, so he was an old man, if he worked for Verizon and made $100,000 a year. And he said, you want to get into telecom or intelligence, right? Which was not available to me. And so I went in and I looked at the jobs, and network switching systems engineer seemed like the best one. And so what that essentially is, you know, you're working with internet and phone and troubleshooting telecommunications. In the Army, what that means is there's a long rubber black cable, and it goes into a big rubberized green box with one button on the front of it called a TED, right? I did learn, actually, the most rigorous school, and including finance school, which I got a degree in, the most rigorous training I've ever had was the military training for network switching engineer, because it was basically a bachelor's degree in switching systems and engineering. Yeah. In about 5 or 6 months, and we would go to school one class at a time, but we would go to school from midnight. Our shift was midnight to 8 a.m. And so I was on the third shift in Georgia, in Augusta, Georgia, and we would be in the middle of the night in school learning, and it wasn't like multiple classes, it was one class at a time for 8 hours with like a couple of breaks. And there's a drill sergeant that would just walk up and down the aisles and make sure you didn't fall asleep. And so that's where I got started with that. But what I learned there was, in the military, and particularly the type of career that I was doing in there, was two things. Was discipline, was learning how to just do the things I had to do, right? You can't fall asleep in class anymore. You can't not shave. You can't show up to work late or out of a uniform. And you have to, you're working together to solve problems. And that was the second thing that I learned, was how to solve problems.
Yeah.
And so in a very literal, like step-by-step sense that I use to this day, and I consider a competitive advantage, was just learning how to troubleshoot a problem, and what problem is better for that than, you know, an electrical engineering diagram, or, you know, where you can really see the progress you're making. And I simply use that to this day. The other element of problem solving I learned in the military was I didn't get to pick who I worked with. I didn't get to pick what the job was. I didn't get to pick where I lived. And so it was like, you're going to get this mission accomplished. You're going to do it with these tools that you have and nothing else, with these people that you have who you didn't pick. Oh, and by the way, you can't quit. And so that 4 years really gave me the ability to work with a lot of different types of people, to solve a lot of different types of problems, and more importantly, the taste of freedom and being able to pick those things that I was passionate about building and problem solving.
Agree with the discipline and the troubleshooting. I have experienced that for myself as well. And it at that time, it was not obvious that it will help you in different ways 20 years later, 15 years later, 10 years later. But just being able to read the different diagrams and understanding complex situations, which you have in business every day, they might not be drawn out yet, but it's kind of, hey, there is a problem. We need to solve this. I have no idea how. I have a couple of ideas. Let's try to put the little puzzle pieces together to find out what the future diagram or the direction is. But you always have a problem and you have a future state where you're trying to get towards. And at least that's how, that helped me as well quite a bit to get into that. So you have been working in the military as well abroad. And there's, again, a common thing. You have been in Germany. What is your favorite German beer?
Oh, well, you know, this is embarrassing, but so I like Kochweizen. What they'll do is, have you had Kochweizen?
No.
They put Coca-Cola in
Kochweizen. Yeah.
And it's like for babies. I think they feed it to children. I really enjoyed it. I thought it was really good. No, I like a really good Hefeweizen. What was the, I think there was a beer from the Netherlands that I really enjoyed. It's been many years. It's been about 15 years since I was there, but. Hefeweizen was the go-to for sure.
Yeah, I'm always asking people about German beer. As a German myself, it's always interesting to, so what do you like? Because then you get a little bit, you're this type of person.
Have you never had Kochweizen? Was that totally out of the box for you?
Yeah, there are different versions of that. So you can put Coke into it, or you can put even banana juice into it. Which is completely different, but if you if it's very, very ice cold, it's awesome.
I believe it. I never had opened myself up to that. Not what I thought we'd be talking about, but I never opened myself up to drinking other stuff in beer, like a beer cocktail, which I guess that would be qualified as. But it was great. And in those days, you know, I'm in the military, we're young men and women, we were drinking a lot, and so it made it a little easier to drink a lot.
I get that. So. You have been in the military and then you moved back to the US. And one thing I'm super intrigued in, how did you get into owning a gym?
Yeah, so when I got back from the military, so one thing, I don't know what it is, whether my mother instilled it in me or me, or it's this entrepreneurial spirit, but I always knew that I wanted to be successful. I wanted to do something big. And so when I was in the military, and I'm not saying this is good. I actually don't think it was good. I think this was a negative trait, but I was in the military. Everybody was, you know, just hanging out when they were off work. Right. And I'm like, I had a subscription to Fortune. I'm like reading, you know, Rich Dad, Poor Dad, and I'm reading 4-Hour Work Week. Actually, I don't think I had read that. I don't think it'd come out yet. I read The Art of the Deal, for God's sake. I'm reading all these books and I'm basically telling everybody, like, I'm going to do something. And so when I got out of the military, I did two things pretty much right away. I went to school. I enrolled in school at DePaul for a finance program, which I ended up, you know, going into thinking that the path was going to be a corporate, you know, titan of industry, right? And certainly that did not happen. But at the same time, as I was enrolling in school, we launched a small, dusty CrossFit gym with two other veteran friends and I, and $9,000 total. We put $3,000 in each, and we got a huge space on a dusty warehouse on the fourth floor of this really dusty, crappy kind of wood loft, timber loft building. And we just did both things. And so I went through school and we had this small community and tribe that we were building really as a hobby, but I was just so in love with it. And so as I graduated school and went into the world of finance and was working on these big multi-million dollar deals, sitting in a literal high rise on top of the world, looking down. And all I could think about was this little tribe of, you know, 80 people that we had grown at that point. And how we could do these things to make it better, and how I could rearrange the equipment, and how I could change the schedule, and how we could run this new, you know, promotion to bring more people in, or a nutrition program, or whatever it was. And so what I found was, you know, I just finally realized that, you know, you can't pay me. There's no amount of money you can pay me to work 40 hours a week, but you can almost like not stop me from working 100 hours if I need to on something that I'm passionate in, that I have control of, and that's helping other people. And so from there, it was a foregone conclusion. You know, I took a couple of little steps to becoming a full-time entrepreneur, but I'm so thankful that I didn't do better and get too much money or something thrown at me from the corporate job, because without that, I wouldn't be sitting here today. And I think that was a very formative decision for us, was to start that gym back in 2010.
Yeah. Awesome. So when you then stepped to the next level, which is like going from a gym perspective, building your own company, what made you switch from there?
So I have this strange combination of background of, as a young man, I was a competitive pool player and a gambler. I went into the military partly to stop doing that. And then in the military, I learned how to solve problems and work with teams. And I understood the idea of, I've been chasing that elite team ever since. And then I was a financial analyst and I was a fitness person. And so all of those things kind of come together to be, okay, I am very passionate about building tribe and community, helping others. I'm a great hang. I'm great in a gym. I'm a good time around a fireplace. But also underneath of that was really hammered in these sort of foundational, like fundamentals of, you know, financial analysis, projections, modeling, understanding the microeconomic situations in a small business. And so being able to have those two things juxtaposed, I think really not just, it's not that it makes me better or worse than any of the other entrepreneurs that may be listening to this or out in the world, but more, it gave me the interest in pursuing not just a tribal fun business and not just a black and white, you know, analytical business, but to marry those two things together. And I think the results of that are just so fun and inspiring, at least to me.
Yeah. How did you get more into the entrepreneurship and then now helping as well other entrepreneurs to be more successful?
Yeah, I had already decided to be a full-time entrepreneur. I had even belonged to a small mastermind that was a lot of fun, but didn't make me much money. But for 7 years, until 27, we were just kind of getting by. You know, we were making $8,000 to $10,000 of revenue, you know, not enough meat on the bone. I was still, you know, working at part-time as a part of another friend's company and kind of paying the bills that way. But there was a moment where the two other owners came to me. They're both veterans, very close friends to this day. And they came to me and they said, look, man, we've got jobs. We have things that we want to pursue. We have these beautiful and wonderful women in our lives. One of them was considering moving away. I think the other was considering, although he's still there. And they said, it's time. We're going to shut it down. This thing's been stagnant. It's not going anywhere. And so I think I went to sleep that night saying, all right, well, if I can wake up tomorrow and imagine a world where this tribe that we've built, this building, this practice, this day-to-day thing that we're so involved in, if I can wake up tomorrow and imagine a world where it doesn't exist, we're going to shut it down. And Jens, I just couldn't. I woke up the next day and I just totally was committed. And so I actually bought out both of those partners with a pretty reasonable buyout of money that I didn't have. They allowed me to pay it over time and kind of self-finance it with the business. And that was me burning the boats, right? If people talk about burning the ships or burning the boats, that moment kind of kicked me into gear of, we're going to make it a business, a capital B business with employees and health insurance and all that other stuff. And I was very fortunate that a young, very unknown, I was probably his seventh client, mentor who helped gym owners. It was a company called Gym Launch. And the guy's name is Alex Hormozi, who's since become very famous in certain circles. He and his wife, Layla, and the girlfriend at the time, they reached out to me. And I have no idea why I answered the phone or why I answered the message. But I signed up for a program of business coaching and mentorship and education. I think it was $12,000. And I didn't have $3,000 in my bank account. Yeah. And so I don't remember the exact structure, but they allowed me to pay it off over time and we were off and running. And so I was able to pay that off ahead of time. And I think we went from, you know, just using the coaching and the mentorship and the information that he had put together so well, I was able to take this business from $8,000 a month to $80,000 a month. And it was a combination of, you know, having a list of things to do, having somebody that I could talk to, that I could run ideas by, having a community of other gym owners that I became involved in. That was just absolutely life-changing for me. And so because of that, I had the opportunity to, he asked me and I accepted, had the opportunity to become a coach for some other gym owners within that organization. And I just loved it. The very first time I got on one of those calls, I knew that I would never not want to be helping other entrepreneurs in the ways that I had been helped by my mentors. Yeah. And so I did that for about a year. Rightly, they decided that they needed a little more control. They couldn't have part-time coaches because I'm an outside cat now, Jens. You can't, I can't be an employee for anybody anymore. That's broken. And so I had to decline that. And they did obviously very well and nothing but love and respect to them. And so I decided, because there was no longer that opportunity, that I would partner up with another friend of mine from the same organization. And we started a company called FitBiz Innovations. eventually FitBiz University, that focused on gyms and did the things that we talk about still to this day. And I learned from them and myself and others. I did that for about 2 years through COVID, by the way. And a point of pride there is I don't think any gym that we ever worked with during COVID shut down unless they chose to. And so at a certain point, though, I realized that all the stuff, the concepts, the structures, the frameworks that I was learning and teaching and evolving, they didn't have a whole lot to do with fitness. And so rather than having the same conversation every day with the same type of business, I decided that it was time to move on and really start to look at different vehicles, different business opportunities, different entrepreneur styles. And that's where that's essentially where we're at today with my company now, Spear and Clover. Spear and Clover has been around since November of last year. I took a year off between selling the two businesses that I had back in the day when my daughter was born. So I took a year off to spend time with her, to start a podcast with ladies and gentlemen like yourself, and to do Muay Thai and Jiu-Jitsu pretty frequently. I just pursued interests. And then in November of last year, we relaunched Spear and Clover, which is my company and my podcast, and have just been having a blast. I've learned so much about so many different types of businesses. And I'm happy to report, Jens, that I was right. The concepts travel. The concepts that worked in gyms work in coaching businesses. The concepts that work in marketing agencies can also be applied to manufacturing companies. And so I've just had a real great time engaging with these other visionary entrepreneurs who are so excited and passionate about what they're doing and have been fortunate enough to see them benefit from some of the things that helped me in the past. And it's just so rewarding to see them then blasting off into the stratosphere.
Yeah, love that. How important was this gap before you really pressed the start button?
I think it was great in some ways, in the ways that you would think. It was cool. We moved to a little beach community in Northwest Indiana, which is, if you're from America, that's unheard of. It's weird. But we live on the lake shore here in this really cool place. And so I was able to go rucking in the dunes with my dogs, with my daughter on my back. I did that yesterday and I'll probably do it again today. And so that part was very cool. And it felt like a reward. It felt like freedom for sure. You know, I always tell people I retired in 2018 because that's pretty much the last time I did something I didn't want to do for money. But I don't recommend it. And here's why. I am so driven by my responsibility to those people that I'm responsible to. I will let myself down 100 times before I'll let you down once. And so having a team, having several hundred clients, having other businesses maybe looking to me to help give them advice or help them through some concepts, those things drive me forward. And so many people that I've spoken to subsequently, so many visionary entrepreneurs are driven by their vision, but that can only carry you so far. Mm. It also helps to have kind of gutters in your lanes, as my friend Aaron would say. And so I will say that starting back up in November, it probably was March before I was back to what I would call like full speed.
Yeah.
As far as, you know, I always say like having the ghost in me, having that thing that's driving you forward, you know, that doesn't get tired, that has a choice to go do something else, but you stay and finish the project, or you get excited about changing something, which is what I was doing. I was changing a landing page right before I got on this call. And it's like that feeling, that's what, it's not money. It's that feeling of building something that you have ownership of and that you'll track and improve and evolve and can share with the world. I think that's what the real exciting part of entrepreneurship is. And so I don't recommend it. What I would have done if I could have done it over again is I would have kept sort of a lower level involvement that would have kept me in momentum and engaging.
Yeah.
You know? I don't know what that would be, but that's what I would have done.
Yeah. But you never know. Maybe your daughter has gotten that from you while you have been off for that period. You never know.
She's a little savage, so she must be taking something from me.
Which is always good. So let's get into frameworks. One of the things I've seen on your website is military mindset. So how would you translate a military mindset to a beneficial topic for founders, for entrepreneurs, for startups?
Yeah, so for starters, if you're watching this, my hat has a spear and clover on it. I have a tattoo that's my personal symbol, which is spear and clover, and of course the shirt too. Looks like I came dressed to play today. But the spear and clover is two of my five core values, and one of those is military mindset. And so I think many, many entrepreneurs, many, many people people have what I would call the spear, which is military mindset. It's discipline. It's hard work. It's showing up. It's stepping forward when there's an opportunity to take responsibility for something. And that is essentially what military mindset is. Just to finish that out, the clover represents spirit of the puppy. And on the back of this shirt, it says both of those things. And so that is sort of me in a nutshell. Spirit of the puppy is friendly, energetic, wants to meet new people, wants to try new things, excited to be around the tribe of people, excited to work together on things. And I think it's those two combinations that have ultimately made me who I am and have helped me in the success that I've been able to achieve at whatever level that is. But also it's the people that I enjoy working with the most is the people who are capable of being laser focused on achieving a big, hairy, audacious goal. But they're also along the way capable of having a good time, of continuing to have hobbies, of, you know, enjoying the process, of seeing struggle for what it really is, which is like an ability to change and grow. And so for me, military mindset is about holding yourself to the standard that is required of you to achieve big things, to have your vision become reality, and to be attractive enough to have people want to work for you, to want to choose to spend their time following and building your vision for a better place and a better world, right? I just want to make sure I have fun while I'm doing it.
Yeah. And that's so important, because if you don't have fun while you are hammering hours, you're pushing yourself forward, you're supporting your clients, whatever you do with your business, if you are not enjoying it in the moment, just by, like you said, changing your landing page, you could outsource all of it, but sometimes it's also good to do it yourself, because then you are in the details and you know what's working, what's not working. And sometimes you mess it up, but that's also good in my eyes, at least, because then you know what doesn't work. If you just keep this playful thing going and help other people to get infected by that, that's helping them to be more successful. Because the worst thing is you're just spearheading into one direction and you're not taking any playful topics, and that it's burning you out one day, worst case.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. I think, you know, you mentioned hiring things out. I have systemized and hired things out in businesses. I still do to some degree now, but I did this. I made a conscious decision with this business, particularly some of the more technical stuff, you know, to be involved at least. Yeah. To be involved in some of these decisions, to understand what was going into the work that was being done to get the results that we were looking for. So something like building a website, or something like writing and creating and managing ads, you know, I had the bandwidth to do that. And so part of it was just doing that so that I can be intimately involved. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think, you know, you talked about it like a game, and I think that's such a great metaphor, because when I'm not working in the nuts and bolts of the tactical stuff, at least in the building part, it's like, no, I don't want to play tag. If I'm sitting at a park, I don't want to play tag. But when I'm in the game, I'm having a great time. Yeah. I'm like, oh yeah, this is fun. Like, I'm engaged. You got to get away from him. He's the one that's it, or whatever it is. And so to me, I just think of, you know, there is a resistance. I mean, I've owned a gym for almost 14 years, and there's a resistance to going to the gym still in me. So I know that it's even bigger in others. But once you're in the game, man, is it fun. And so I try to keep myself kind of inoculated to that resistance by making sure that I'm in the game, whether that's in fitness, whether that's in my personal life, or whether that's in business. I want to know. I want to be able to make informed decisions. One of my mentors, Martin Rawls Meehan, good friend of mine, owns a great company called Reverie. It's a sleep technology company. They make beds and mattresses and other cool stuff. And I remember the very first day that I went to his office, he let me sit in our meeting, where these two engineers brought in a CAD drawing, a CAD program, and put it up on the screen. Yeah. And these guys went to MIT. He has like legit engineers at his company. And he fixed the CAD that they were doing. There was like a place awesome. Where two pieces would break. And I watched him fix it, and I was like, are you Batman? Like, who are you? And he's like, I'm involved. You know, his R&D department is right next to his office. I mean, it was just this thing of like, yeah, man, I put my name on this thing, and so I'm involved. I understand how it works. I think somebody like Zuckerberg is a good example of that.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, I think he knows as much as you could, you know, what's going on in his company. And he like coded the thing, a lot of it himself, right? So I think being in the game is really important for an entrepreneur to the limit of your ability to do
it. Yeah, I agree. And it's very, very helpful. Another thing I've found on your website is impact. So how do you define impact for yourself, but as well for your clients?
I'm going to borrow from my former mentor, Alex Hormozi. He talks about learning and teaching. And so if we think of impact, I'm helping to teach entrepreneurs to teach or make an impact on the world, whether that's primarily through clients, right? And so learning is same situation, different behavior. That simple. You've learned not when you get information in your brain, but when you take action that you otherwise wouldn't have taken that is superior to what you would have done. And so teaching, which is what I'm trying to do with entrepreneurs, teaching is my ability to get you to learn, my ability to get you to behave differently than you otherwise would have. Not to know something in your head, not to be able to talk about it at a party, but to actually come upon that situation and behave differently. And so we can translate that to a business. To a business, it's, I know that you use, you know, this water bottle, you know, whatever this is, but I'm going to educate you on why you should use this bottle that is superior, less expensive, less longer, better for the environment, etc. My goal is not to make the bottle or any of that. My goal is to get people to choose the superior bottle and to have actually learned. And that's where we make an impact. Mm. And so I think so often people don't connect those dots. I talk to entrepreneurs all the time that will tell me about their big, grandiose vision. And that's a rare skill, but it's not hard if you have it. If you have vision, which not everybody has the type of vision I'm talking about, but if you have it, you know that you can sit there and you can have vision in everything you see if you let yourself. Mm. The real thing is to take action in a way that that vision starts to happen in the real world. And that's impact.
Yeah. I love that. And it's so important to get that built down. If we link this to the next one, which is long-term focused, but short-term actions. And that's maybe connected to that.
Yeah, 100%. So another of my core values is how I work, and that's head up, feet moving. So I always have my head up. I'm always looking at where we're trying to go, but my feet are moving. I'm paying attention to the changing circumstances as they arise. I like to think of, you know, the distant point on the horizon, right? I'm walking down the street or running down the street. There's a distant point on the horizon, but I have to still navigate those bumps and those curves along the way to get there. And so, you know, you can start very simply with, you know, what is your total objective? If you understand your objective very, very clearly, then your strategy, which is second, becomes very, very clear as well. And if your strategy is clear, then tactics are just perfunctory, right? Like tactics present themselves. And so often entrepreneurs or just anybody trying to solve a problem, they start in the middle or even at the end, and they haven't really started with understanding what the true objective was. And so, you know, we talked earlier, a little bit before we started recording, about this idea of shiny object syndrome that so many people, like me at least, that I've met have complained about and struggle with and continue to struggle with. Me too. So I like to think about it in terms of how do I stay focused? Well, I have a vision. I see a block of marble. I have a vision for this statue. It's a beautiful statue. It's in my brain. It's nothing in the world right now, only a block of marble. And so as I start to chip away at it, I'm excited. I get the broad strokes done. I get it, you know, kind of fleshed out. And then another idea pops into my head. Everybody listening to this who's an entrepreneur knows what I mean about that. And the way that I decide whether to take action on that or not is, does it remove marble and make this sculpture a more pure and beautiful and effective vision or version of my vision? Or am I taping something on because I don't feel like addressing the original problem? And so that simple test has guided me, you know, to whatever success that I've gotten. I mean, it's not always been right, but that's how I sort of self-discipline myself to not just take hard lefts and hard rights, because we all know somebody who starts 15 different companies and none of them ever really get off the ground because they're just moving on from excitement to excitement. And as a former gambling addict, I can tell you that that's not a very good way to go.
I love that. Interesting enough, I was meeting the other day with the former chief HR person from Heineken, the brewery. We didn't have a beer, unfortunately, because it was in the morning. But yeah. So we talked about our corporate background, and he's already retired. He's, I think, in his 60s. We just chatted, what is the difference of the startups and the smaller companies and entrepreneurs succeeding, and comparing that to the world where we come from, he from Heineken, me from IKEA. And what he was saying is, literally what you just said is, you put your vision out there and then you go deep into details on how do you get there. And these organizations are doing that. And I've experienced that. I was part of it for more than 12 years. They do this on training people on the details. And in IKEA, it was like, okay, you're selling a couch. How do you move the couch by 10 degrees and you sell double? How do you do this? How do you do that? And just these details a lot of entrepreneurs, when they're getting started, who have not been in this school, they're just trying to wing it. They're not focusing on the details to get towards the bigger perspective. And that's quite interesting that we both have had the same experience.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. And that goes right back to troubleshooting an electrical diagram, right?
Yeah.
Because every single question results, if you answer one question, it only gives you two new questions or more, right? And so I think so many people never open that box of answering the questions. There's a word that I heard in college called satisficing. And satisficing, if this is correct, this is what I remember it to be. Satisficing is picking the first option that you come up with that solves the immediate problem. And that is the plague that is so pervasive in entrepreneurship. Is like, well, that'll work, let's go. Oh, that'll work, let's go. Put a Band-Aid on it. But for me, it's there's a thing, and I attribute it to the work that I was kind of, not forced, but pushed through in the corporate world and working as a banker, was, okay, numbers went up. Why did they go up? Because I remember thinking, this is good. Why are we upset? It's like, well, it's not good enough that it's good. We need to know why it's good.
Yeah.
We need to be able to reproduce why it's good. So obviously, if something's bad, we're going to pour attention into it until we figure it out, right? We're bleeding.
Yeah.
We need to stop the bleeding. But when it's good, I want to know why it's good. I want to know exactly why it's good. I don't want to know that the ads worked. I want to know which ad worked. And more importantly, I want to know what part of which ad worked. And then when we get to there, I want to know why that part works so that I can reproduce it without people realizing it, right? And so anytime we answer a question, I think some people see the top line, which is the question is answered. To me, I look immediately to the bottom line to see what it is that we can learn and what the new questions are that arose from that.
Yeah. And in the end, it's how do you ask better questions and get into that? And that's, I think, as well, when you're growing with your enterprise or with your startup, with your entrepreneurial journey, as more people you get onto your team, you need to distill that into everyone. Everyone needs to get that mindset. And that's a bit like you as a founder have the responsibility to do that. As more people you onboard, if they're not taking it, it's very, very hard to keep it in the organization.
Yeah, I think there's one word that captures that. Obviously, when you hire people, obviously, when you work with people, obviously, if you or want to be an entrepreneur and start a business, you need to have the skills. You need to be able to do it. You need to understand it. You need to all those things. But the one word that I've never seen fail is interest.
Yeah.
If you have an unbounded interest in the thing that you're doing, it pulls you. I'm tingling. I can feel it in my face right now, Jens. Like the idea to have interest, nothing trumps that. Human progress is driven on interest and survival. But it's like interest. I wonder if I can plant this flower in the ground and I can have food in the spring. Like it's interest. You know what I mean? And so the people that I have the most empathy for are those people who, when I ask them what they're interested in, they come back with basically nothing. I like to watch TV with my friends or something. And that's, by the way, that's not a value judgment. It's more like, I wish for you that you find interest in something that pulls you forward, because otherwise all of the energy has to come from you every single day. And dude, if I was running just off knee fuel, I wouldn't get anywhere. I'm going somewhere because I'm interested in it and I can see it being a better opportunity than where I'm at now. And so ultimately, if you are interested enough, there's nothing that you won't do to get to that thing.
Yeah, can't agree more. It's so important. Let's go into community and tribe building. I mean, you have done something extraordinary when you owned your gym. How do you use this today? Because building a tribe in a physical environment is different than in a digital environment, or are similarities in that. So I think, at least for me, that's one of the golden nuggets when you're building a business, building a community around it, which kind of you get, at least in my eyes, you get support from other people in helping you to promote your business. So how do you build and how can people build a community, and how did you do that from the past, and how do you help people today and getting into that?
I think actually a lot of it is fueled by what I was just talking about interest. And so it's like if a marketing executive goes to somebody and says, make something viral. It's like, well, how do you do that? I mean, certainly nowadays, there's all sorts of analytics behind that, that certainly somebody will hear me and disagree here. But what I'm saying is, ultimately, it's about understanding people's interest. Sales, marketing, it's about understanding the people's interest that you're trying to serve. When you're building a community, or you're building a team or a culture or a client community, it kind of depends on the business In a CrossFit gym, certainly there's both, right? You have the tribe of employees and then you have the tribe of clients. But it's all about interest. And so, you know, for me, tribe building, I don't know that I would say that I'm good at building communities as much, or culture is the better word. I don't know that I'm good at building culture as much as I'm good at putting the environment, the petri dish, putting the environment in place that culture will form. And so I can give you a good example of that. Very early in our gym, the very first time we decided to throw a Christmas party, me and the two other gentlemen that I was working with, shout out to Dan and Garnett, we were like, let's plan this Christmas party. And then I don't remember whose idea it was, but it was like, if we plan this Christmas party, it's going to suck. Nobody's going to have fun, you know, whatever. And so from the very first year, we started a party planning committee. I just asked the, you know, friendly, active, socially, you know, engaged couple females, but also a male, to put together the ideas for the party. And I gave him like $200 and a trip to the dollar store, the party supply store, you know? Yeah. And that party was insane. We had so much fun. And so, you know, building culture and community is so much about getting people in a room, whether advertising or just inviting your friends, getting people in a room that have a common interest, and then letting the culture happen, and then sort of shepherding that. And I definitely identify with this idea of the shepherd, of like, okay, there's a wolf in here. We got to get rid of that one. And this is what the sheep like to do. Let's shepherd that towards someplace that's virtuous and helpful and has value for them. And so I think a big part, I turned and looked in 2018 or 19, I looked at my wife one day and I go, the only reason we can't grow this community is because you have to do CrossFit to do a part of it. And CrossFit's really hard.
Yeah.
And so I remember that moment where it's like, everybody was just having this great time. And almost none of the ideas were coming from me. Certainly none of the execution, very by and large, was coming from me. It was mostly about just trying to listen to what those folks who'd gathered wanted and were drawn to and would participate in and potentially vote with their dollars for. And so the learning was mostly just listening.
Yeah. It's quite cool because in the way you gave a very, very simple example, like creating a party committee. It's not rocket science. Like everyone can do that, but it's so simple that people are not thinking about it. It's the same if you have a company with 100 people, you don't need to organize the party or whatever you do yourself. You can just ask a group of people, hey, who would be interested in organizing the party? And then people will show hands and then they will get things going. And I think it's a lot more opportunities, even with your existing clients, you can do the same things.
And I would say that there's a central problem that almost all entrepreneurs at some point have. And that is, we're visionaries, we're capable, we're willing to do the work. And so we walk around all day, like out of Donnie Darko, with like this beam coming from us outward. And it's like, what can I deliver? What can I do? What's the best party I could put together? What's the best product I can put together? What's this thing that I can deliver? And the problem is there's almost never anybody standing in the path of that beam going, I hope he does that,
exactly.
Right? And so this idea of delivering what I would say, like delivering features. I can deliver this feature. I can deliver that feature. We're geared to think of how to deliver new and better features, better water bottle, better party, better whatever, couch, right? The problem is nobody's walking around looking for that thing you just came up with. What they're looking for is the result of that thing, the benefit of that thing. Mm. And so the framework, since we're talking frameworks, the framework is, yes, develop your features, but then step out of yourself, stand where that client or the most clients you want to reach are, and ask yourself, what is it that they're currently looking for?
Yeah.
And a lot of times when entrepreneurs do that, they realize they've been working too hard and that they've been throwing the stones in the wrong direction altogether. And so they simply say, oh, that's what you want? Well, crap. Okay. Then I guess I'll just do that. And then people go, yes, take my money. That's how it works.
Yeah. And it always sounds so easy if you have done it and you know the path to get there, but it's always easier to say it when you have done it. So the tricky thing is, and maybe let's dive a little bit into that before we go into the podcast. How do you help people realizing this? How do you get people that work with you into that frame of, hey, there are a couple of things you need to change. You need to find out for yourself to be able to serve your customers or potential customers in a different way.
By and large, the answer is there are steps, right? And so just like I said earlier, you don't start an engineering diagram troubleshooting in the middle or at the end. You have to start at the beginning. And so, you know, for us, and it depends on who I'm working with and how deeply they want to go. Certainly we can put stuff in place right away that will work. You know, there are things that I can do there. But if in my ideal world, if I'm trying to help somebody become a fisherman, not just help them give them fish, what you have to do is you have to start with, okay, well, what are your core values? What is the mission that you're setting out to do? This is not new. Everybody's heard core values, mission, long-term, short-term goals, things like that. But also then, what is the market that you want to serve? Who are these people? Who are the people? What do they currently need? What's being done well? Where do we see an opportunity for improvement or differentiation? And then narrowing that down to the avatar. Who is the one person that has one really bad bleeding neck problem that we can solve in a simple, superior, and effective way, right? And so if we can do that, then we can turn up the volume. Because so often, people turn up the volume on something that's unclear. It's an unclear message, and they just turn up the volume, and so, you know, and so you see these ads, and you're like, who came up with that? I'm complaining about that all the time to my wife, by the way, when I see, like, bad billboards or bad ads. I'm like, who wrote that? Like, nobody. The only thing you're going to do is get people like me to start yelling about it in the car. But anyway. And so from there, that once you do that, then you have the answers. You have the homework done. And then it becomes a lot easier to address those things. Because what you'll often find after that, it seems like a lot, but it's really not that hard. Once you get to that point, you look at those group of people and those group of people, please deliver us this. And you go, you mean this? And they go, yes. Or they say no, and then you go back to the drawing board.
Yeah. And then they throw money at you in the best case.
I mean, it's so funny how simple. We've been hearing cliches our whole lives that I'm just starting to understand as a 40-year-old man who's been trying for 40 years. You know, like, there's so many things. Honesty is the best policy. Authenticity, all that stuff. You go, yeah, but not for me. I'm going to pretend to be the cool guy with the motorcycle and the leather jacket. And it's like, oh, no, actually, like, what we're doing right now, I have no doubt, I have very little doubt, that one day, if I meet you at a podcasting conference, I'm going to talk to the same guy I'm talking to right now.
Yeah.
And I can promise you from my side, that's what you get as well. It doesn't sound like it's hard, but it is, because so many of us have such a hard time just being ourselves publicly and professionally. And even something as simple as just being yourself, telling the truth, those things are just like very highly rewarded in marketplaces and in our community.
I agree. The tricky thing with that, at least in my experiences, if you work in large corporate, you're always kind of nudged into the direction to play a role. It's not about be authentic self. It's more about you have to fit in, my friend. This is where we are. This is how we communicate. And I get that from a large corporate perspective. But in the end, for us, and that's one tip I give to every entrepreneur that's getting started, that's going into that direction and focusing a little bit more with startup founders right now, build your personal brand. Even if you're not, you don't want to be an influencer, and you're very good in that as well, utilizing social media as an example. Build your personal brand, because you, in the beginning, you as a person, you are the differentiator. There might be companies who are doing exactly the same thing, even if you build a software solution. You are talking to the potential clients. You are talking to the customers. You are the differentiator in the way how you interact with the other person. If you are playing a role, they will feel this and they will not buy from you, even if the solution might be helping them. At least that's what I recommend every young person. Build your personal brand. I wish I had started with 30, not with 40.
Yeah, it was hard. I think you had to have a real knack or insight into where our culture and technology was going to have been able to realize that you're just a guy driving in your car listening to the radio, and one day your thoughts on the song on the radio might be broadcast on Twitter. You know, like, I think that our generation in particular is kind of the in-betweeners. I think they do call us the lucky ones, because we grew up without cell phones and internet for a little while, and then we had it and have seen it kind of go all the way. But it's not surprising to me that you might not want to build a personal brand. And I can understand that. But I will say, I don't have a whole lot of insight to offer to. So, okay, actually, let me take that back. Spear and Clover. It's not Jason and Clover. It's not Jason Skisik's brand. Spear and Clover is a brand that stands on its own in many ways. but it is a direct representation of like the most core values that I have. And so in that way, what I would say is if you picked, you know, I'm trying to think of an example, I think Apple's a probably good example. Like that brand, particularly back in the day, was just such an expression of what Steve Jobs believed in and who he was and how he could see the world and its change. And there's just myriad explanations or examples of that in practice with that company. It's not Steve Jobs, but he needed to create a company that was standing for those things. And so I couldn't agree more that you need to be a personal brand. I don't think that you have to be an influencer.
Agree.
I don't think that you have to have a lot of followers. I don't think that what you do on vacation necessarily impacts why, whether or not I'll buy your clothes. But I will say this. There's a company called Go Fast, Don't Die. And I buy their stuff. It's a motorcycle brand. I don't motorcycle. But I love, love, love the founder of that company and the way that they present themselves. He like rides around the country on a motorcycle and like has like community campouts and big bonfires and all this stuff. This guy is living, I don't even know his name, but this guy is living this lifestyle that I find so romantic and exciting and adventurous. And so I buy his clothes because I'm like, yeah, I will buy that brand. I don't own a motorcycle. My wife would kill me if I owned a motorcycle. Yeah. But just the idea of like, when I see that, it says so much to me about who you are and I believe it. And then when I put it on my head, I feel like I'm a little bit representing that. I mean, I went, this is, sorry to dovetail here, but this is more personal. I went on a long ruck march with my good friend, Will Taylor. Shout out to Will. He came and visited for a couple of days and we live here in the dunes. And so we put a log on our shoulder and a backpack on our back. And I took one picture the whole day. It was not about that. It was just, we were going on a conversation. We were working hard, doing this really fun thing. It was like a Tuesday. So it was like, we're both entrepreneurs. This is cool. This is what we want to do, you know? And we got to the end of it. I think we had done like, you know, 10 miles or something. We never put the log down. We both had packs on our backs. The dogs were having a blast. And at the end of the day, we sat down on the beach. The sun was coming down. It's kind of romantic. And we're leaning up against the log that we had carried all day. And I looked at him. I said, marketing is trying to use a picture to express what we just went out and did so that the people that are involved in our stuff don't have to go do that. I don't need you to go ruck for 10 miles and get all sandy and wet and sweaty and gross. Do that. I think it's great, but you don't have to. And you know what the funniest thing about this is? I said that day. And as of today, the one picture that I took is probably my highest grossing photo ad on Facebook in the last 5 years.
That's awesome.
And it's a picture of his back with a jacket. There's no muscles. He's got a log on his shoulder. My two wet dogs are smiling and running around chasing the ball. And it's like a small little beach. And it represents a day that actually happened. Right. And when people see that picture, they know what led up to that moment. They know the type of guy that he must be to have chosen to do that for fun. And I just think that there's so much that can be expressed with that.
Yeah, I love that. And that goes back then to the community because they feel part of it. And that's what it is about.
I mean, Forrest Gump running on the street and people are like, what are you doing? I don't know. Just running. I guess I'll just run. I didn't have anything going on, right?
Yeah, true. Let's get into your podcast. Obviously, everyone should check out episode number 73 with an awesome guest. But tell us a little bit about what are you trying to achieve with the podcast? What are the guests about and what can people learn from your podcast?
First of all, Spear and Clover podcast, thank you so much for the mention and thank you for being a guest. You were fantastic. You also, we've collaborated already and I hope to many more times in the future. I'm fascinated by you and what you do. I think you're really, but the show is essentially what we've been doing today. It's talking to entrepreneurs primarily, although not exclusively, and asking them questions about why it is that they do what they do, how they have found success, what they've learned from their struggles. And for me, I have just a boundless appetite for learning from people who have gone through a different path on a similar journey. And so if you're an entrepreneur and you feel like sometimes you've been going through it alone, that's what Spear and Clover can provide is really an opportunity to look at such similar journeys that have such different maps and experiences and struggles and successes. And so for me, as you have done so beautifully today, it's all about, you know, when we get that first answer and how did you end up there?
Yeah.
And why is that important? I love that stuff. And so it's super fun. It's a passion project for me. You know, we don't have advertising or anything, but mostly it was just my interest in what makes, you know, you tick. How do we innovate the human way? Like, I want to know more about that. And so it's just been a labor of love, and I probably will never stop doing it. It's been wonderful.
Yeah. So everyone who is listening to this podcast, go over to the Spear and Clover podcast, give him a like, give him a shout out. And if you like it, listen to all episodes. I listened to a couple of as a prep for our interview when I was on your podcast, and now as well for this. I think there are so many cool guests you have, and as well how you do it. I really love your style. So I wish I could do that a little bit better with my German English. So it's really fun to listen to you. Awesome. So really, really appreciate your podcast as well. So everyone hop over and have a listen to it. I will put the link to my episode on your podcast into the show notes as well.
That was a really good one. I mean, I think I'm fascinated by people that I agree with so much as I agree with you when we've talked offline and online. I'm fascinated when we're different guys. We've had different lives. We're from different countries. Yeah. And yet we're both going like this. When you're talking, I'm going, I know what you mean. I think about it that way, but I know. I can't get enough of that. I have really enjoyed that. It's own reward, man.
Yeah. Let's get into the last part of the podcast where I'm asking two questions that I use with every guest. First question is, if you could work with a project that is impacting every human being on Earth, what project would you choose to work with, and why would you choose to work with that project?
You know what? I'm actually in the very early stages of maybe doing something like that. But what I have a huge fascination with is this one question that I found in myself over and over and over again, and I've seen it reflected in almost everybody I've ever worked with. And that is this idea of knowing that something is good for me, knowing that I enjoy it, knowing that I, working out, nutrition, good sleep habits, whatever, knowing all of those things, knowing that I feel better, I'm more happy, and then still having a resistance to doing the things that make that happen. And even loving doing those things, jujitsu or whatever, running, biking. And so if I could do a project that would include everybody, it would be to tie our results to the actual markers of what causes that to happen. And so right now that's something like Apple Health or MyFitnessPal or any of these fitness trackers. I think that eventually we will get to a place where we're able to diminish that resistance, that voice in your head that says to stay on the couch. And I think the way we get there is by increasingly delivering effortless information that is basically encouraging you to go forward, not because it's like, oh, you're good enough, go out there and have fun, you can do it. Like, that's great if you don't have the data. But if I could tell you, for instance, like, hey, did you know that since you've been putting your phone away an hour before bed, you've gotten longer sleep and you got a raise at work, and your body fat has come down and you've gone to the gym 5 times a week instead of 3 times a week. And so really starting to connect the dots that most people just are not able to do themselves. And so ultimately, like, if I had a life's mission, it would be helping people overcome that resistance that keeps them from living their best, like, most healthful, long, happy and enjoyable lives.
Love that. Next question. What advice would you give to a young innovator that's just getting started?
Don't rush and learn to love the struggle. And I don't mean like learn to say you love the struggle, but I mean literally now that when I ask for feedback from people that I respect or customers or market research, the only information that I really put a lot of value on is the negative, is the stuff I got wrong. Because we have two choices as entrepreneurs. We can be right or we can be successful the first time, right? And so I want to find out where I'm wrong. I take this into personal relationships. If I have a political or philosophical or just whatever around the house disagreement with somebody, I very quickly want to figure out where they're at. I want to sit on their side of the table. Mm-hmm. I don't want to leave a conversation a winner. I want to leave with both of us agreeing on what was correct. And so that's the same thing as an entrepreneur. So if you're a young entrepreneur, don't go out to seek the justification that your first and good idea was correct. Go out and figure out what the real correct answer is that maybe comes from the struggle and the failures and the iterations that came from your first idea.
Great advice. Yeah, so important. Last point. So I will obviously put all the different social media links to your website and everything into the show notes, but what is the best platform to reach out to you if there are people and listeners and say, I need to reach out to Jason. I want to talk to him. I want to learn more about frameworks, and maybe even he can help me with my business.
Yeah, so our Instagram is probably, it's Jason Skisic on Instagram or Spear and Clover on Instagram. Those are both outlet points for us. But if you have any kind of questions, or your business is in a tough spot, or you think that something that you heard today spoke to you, I would just schedule a call. Go onto my website, www.spearandclover.com, and you can book a strategy session. We can talk about your business. We can, you know, kind of figure out exactly if there's an opportunity for us to help you. And like you, Jens, we were talking about this before recording, I'm a connector. And so if I can't help you, I always know somebody that can. So if you're feeling like you're alone, I'm definitely, or you need to get past something in the business, I'm definitely somebody that can be a resource.
Awesome. Jason, thank you very much for being on the show. It was a pleasure to have you.
Thank you, sir. I appreciate you having me on, and would love to have you back on my show anytime.